In last week's meeting of the EdTech Club, we spoke with TCEA's Director of Governmental Relations, Jennifer Berglund, about some of the policies we've seen coming out at the state level, which is generally where education policy comes from. Of course, keeping up with education and education policy has been, well, more complicated than usual in the last, let's say, 6 months. And so, as many of us begin a new school year, we looked at what some of these policies might do or what they might be aimed at doing. But we had to cut the conversation a little short because there's another part of it that we need to discuss when it comes to remote and hybrid learning, which so many of us are thinking about right now. You see, I think of it as a hardware-software question. Do you remember hardware and software back when computers were like machines and not ephemeral internet-connected devices? You had your hardware, you had the machine itself, and you had the software. You had the thing that runs the machine, its programming. Of course, this all still exists, it just looks a little different than it used to. And when it comes to remote learning, I think of it as a hardware-software question because there are many remote learning resources and tools and techniques, as we know, and as we've covered on this podcast, in our TechNotes blog, and as well as in many of TCEA's online courses. But the other part of it is the hardware, is the devices. Of course, for years we've talked about one-to-one device programs, we've talked about expanding broadband connectivity, and now these questions and ideas about the hardware portion of remote learning are more important than ever. So this week, we're diving back in with Jennifer Berglund. We're going to get a little bit of background, a bit of a recap from our last episode, and then jump into a discussion of how broadband is affecting remote learning right now and what's being done to help connect parents, teachers, students, administrators, and everyone involved in education. If this sounds relevant to what you're doing, and I bet it is, then I'm glad you stopped by the EdTech Club. In this meeting, we're talking about connectivity. We're talking about Texas's own Operation Connectivity. We're talking about what parents and families should consider when it comes to remote and hybrid learning, and more. And all of it starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome back to the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. So, this week's guest speaker for our club members is once again Jennifer Berglund, and once again this week, we are talking about connecting students during periods of remote learning. So, let's get into our conversation all about the lowdown on broadband.
If I'm an educator, I know, for example, I'm going to start this new year differently. I'm worried about how I'm going to be taking attendance, what that might mean. We know that there is the formula or the way it's done is going to be held for a little while to allow for that transition. I know that if I'm making a switch to remote or hybrid learning, that I can get access to a learning management system. Schoology, so I can have a platform to do this teaching. And I know that if I'm looking for resources that used to be physical, there's an option for me to get potentially some digital resources. So the next step is on the consumer's end, the student's end. Do they have the setup to actually engage in all this? That's where connectivity comes in.
Yes, that is a thing that concerns school districts. I wouldn't say the most, but it is one of the top concerns, because in order for this to be successful, in order you mentioned remote and hybrid, and that they're basically TEA has identified three ways that school districts can move into school. One is 100% on campus. Another is children, primarily one of the things that happened probably a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, the commissioner basically did mandate that all school districts must allow parents to enroll children in an on-campus situation. Of course, that was, he kind of made that before the surge kind of happened. Since then, there is, he's clarified that if there are outbreaks and local health officials, in consultation with local health officials, school districts can shut down temporarily. But the default is on campus, if at all possible, and at least to give parents that option. And then the other one would be parents, if a district wanted to give parents an option to do remote learning, which would be, you know, at home. And the third one is that hybrid. Part of it's at work, part of it's at school, and part of it's at home. And one of the ways that they're doing that is he has recommended that school districts, and I think this is any school districts that is offering a remote option, is surveying their parents, and they're giving their parents options, and basically they're saying you must choose for either 6 to 9 weeks. You must, basically they don't want a parent to say, I want my child at school, and then the next week, no, I want them at home.
I'm going to be on a trip. Could you please watch?
Exactly.
And I'll come back, and then I'll watch. Because we can see very easily how that would lead to potential transmission, right? If you have a student who's in a contained group of students, but then leaves, maybe interacts with other people, and then comes back a week later, 2 weeks later, or whatever.
Right. And of course, if a child is sick and they get COVID, they'll go home for 14 days until they're, mm-hmm. you know, well, et cetera. But, you know, that's all the unknowns, is what's it going to be like once you start bringing kids back into an environment. And of course, they want them to do all the things that you possibly can to keep while the kids are at the school, to keep them safe. But again, that's an unknown. Anybody that knows what school is like knows what and how children behave at a school. The thought of social distancing is just almost unfathomable. So anyway.
And so if I'm on the other side of this, if I'm a parent, if I'm a student, if I'm a family, I'm thinking about how I'm going to engage in it. What are my options?
The parent needs to make sure that they have a device for the child and enough bandwidth for however many children they have at home to interact with their school. And so one of the things they have to consider, if the school is doing synchronous, that almost is going to entail blocks of time that you're going to be Zooming, and that takes more bandwidth. And let me clarify that does not mean a kid is going to be sitting on the Zoom from 8 a.m. until 3:00. The commissioner has ruled that synchronous can be 4 hours and they get full day funding. So and you could block and you could mix that up throughout the day. So if you went the synchronous route, you might have an hour, you know, from 8 to 9, and then you might give kids a couple of hours break, and then you do, you know, come back, and then, you know, your schedule could be mixed of off camera and on camera. And then asynchronous, you know, you would just need to make sure you have enough broadband for the kid to be able to, the student to be able to, you know, get online at various times. The problem with this is, does a family have a device, enough devices for their students, and enough bandwidth? And that's the reason why the commissioner has, and the governor and several other policy leaders found money in the state's CARES Act to be able to provide the state school districts with $200 million to help them purchase devices and hotspots for families that do not have the kind of bandwidth that they need. Mm. And that is happening right now. It is a matching fund. So you're actually looking at a $400 million purchase, because $200 is going to be paid for by the state, $400 is going to be paid for by the local, I mean, $200 by the state, $200 by the local LEA. Mm-hmm. But Andrew, not every student in the state, even a hotspot's going to hit, because you've got, Texas is a very large geographical state. We have a lot of rural parts of the state. We have one part of the state has really tall pine trees. They call it the piney woods, and mm-hmm. it's hard to get direct line of sight for some of these, you know, broadband solutions. And so we do have some students that at the beginning of the school year, even if the school district wanted to provide them with a solution, they can't. And so those individual situations, they may have to get paper packets to them, which is not ideal, but it is maybe a solution if there's an outbreak and the child can't come to school. Right. Of course, they also have Wi-Fi on wheels, which, you know, there are a lot of communities in the spring put access points on school buses and drove them to certain areas so that, you know, the kids could come in and get connected, you know, in their car sitting by a school bus. Again, that is not ideal, but it is a possibility.
I can see myself in the car, like, hurry up, download it all now. No, just download all of it so we can go back home.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course you have your local libraries and you have your local, you could go sit on the steps of your school possibly, but again, that is, you know, that's not equitable, but we're right. working on that. That's part of Operation Connectivity's task, is to, they're short term. Let's try to help and get as many kids connected as possible. And then there's long term, which is hopefully to finally figure out how to bring broadband to every Texan, so that we don't have to worry about that aspect.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from observing some of the work that a lot of different education organizations here in the state, including ours and others, you know, have pushed for broadband access for a while now. And a lot of folks in education have seen this as a need, maybe not an immediate need in the past, but the current moment has sort of made it an immediate need. Is that sort of the impression you've gotten?
Yes, I kind of tell people it's like we pulled back the curtain of the Wizard of Oz and we realize he's just a man. Yeah. You know, we've been a lot of times we've been led to believe that, oh, we've got cell coverage. And I think people that in big cities just think everybody has broadband. Right. And you occasionally drive across, you know, Texas and you may lose service for a moment, but then pretty soon you're reconnected. And so there's just this belief that everybody has this. And many of us have known that's not true, but COVID has made it glaringly obvious that we still have a broadband issue that we need to solve. And it's not just an educational issue. You know, it's not something that we just have to solve just during COVID. We've recognized now that COVID has helped us see that it's not just education, it's also health, it's banking, it's employment. You know, broadband is used for all of those things. But also that we've uncovered some evidence in the Operation Connectivity effort that students with broadband score better on, you know, state assessments and national assessments. And there really is, it is a homework gap. You know, some kids have, you know, the world at their fingertips at night when they're doing their research papers, and other kids do not. And that's an inequity that we've got to try to solve. So yes, broadband is an issue that we've been working on, I know, since 2013. And we're kind of excited that this situation, if there's a silver lining, it's put a spotlight on that effort. And I think we have policymakers recognizing we've got to fix this.
You know, the world we live in, even my own dad had to get an email address, you know, and he was never going to do it. He was never going to do it. He had to sign up for something or got a new bank account or something, and they needed an email address. And he was like, I don't have one. And they were like, well, you need one.
I know.
He was like, I'll make one, but I will never check it. And he doesn't, but that's okay. He lives next door, so I can just yell at him.
There you go. My 90-year-old father lives in a community about 2 hours away, and I have logmein.com so that I can log into his computer and help him occasionally.
Oh, that's very clever. That's actually really clever.
Yeah, he doesn't live next door, and so it's just, and usually it's because, you know, something simple. He does know how to check email, but.
But sometimes when you're so used to just clicking that one button or whatever, and something goes wrong, something updates or whatever.
I'll get a call. Jennifer, can you get on my computer?
Okay, folks, now as you can guess, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So if you want a little extra credit this week, check out the links in the description. I'm not going to make you do homework this week. That would just be cruel. But if you want to dig into these issues a little bit more, learn a little bit more about the programs available and what it's going to take to implement them, of course, check out the links in the show notes. And if you know someone who should be listening to this episode or any of the other episodes so far, make sure you share the show with them. And spread the word by liking and subscribing, if you haven't already. As always, you can keep up with the latest in remote learning and everything else education and educational technology by following TCEA on your favorite social media platforms. And after all, as a member, this is your EdTech Club. So if you've got ideas, thoughts, questions, concerns, suggestions for the podcast, send it to podcast@tcea.org. Otherwise, that is it for this week. I hope we gave you a little taste on what we need to be thinking about when it comes to connecting students for remote learning. But of course, the discussion will continue about this and many other topics in upcoming meetings of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.